Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial. 92.9 FM, 680 AM. If you're away from the radio dial, though, you can always stream us live on the Odyssey app. We're also available on TuneIn Radio as well as iHeartRadio. You can check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How's it going?
It goes, my friend. It goes. Let's welcome to the program. He, of course, is the host of VSiN Primetime, airing on weeknights. He's also the host of VSiN's College Football and College Basketball Betting Podcast. You can follow him on the Everything app at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Yes. Do you get geeked up over schedule release news?
I do not. I've actually found myself in the subsequent years getting more and more annoyed.
By the leaks or just the buildup? All of it. What bugs you?
The social media posts really annoy me. I find,
like, the team videos.
Yeah, I find about 85% of them to not really be clever, humorous, or entertaining. And I realize that they're all just engagement farming, and we're literally just reading off names in a paper. In which, really, the only thing we learn, right, is the dates of the games. We know who the teams are playing already. Right. And then
there's no surprises, like, what? Chiefs are playing?
That
the
game
Bills?
Came out of nowhere. Did they just schedule that one? Most of the schedule gets leaked before the announcement anyway. And so I just kind of view it as another one of the many things the NFL does, which is kind of look at me and it's like, I like your product, but I don't really care for how you present it. So
it does almost feel like a flex. Like, yeah, there's the NBA and NHL going on, but we're going to take a day just telling you when these games will be played, maybe 6 months from now.
And I suppose, I guess, like, you know, you learn when your Thursday night games will be, when your, you know, the number of primetime and whatnot, but for the most part, it's kind of noise to me. I do also find it, though, I think you can avoid it more so. Like, there are other things that the NFL hammers down your throat that you can't avoid. I do feel like schedule release, you can avoid it, and it's not, like, bad for business.
Yeah. No, I think the thing that I – maybe this is more of an off-season topic. The nerdiest thing that gets you excited, and for me, there's two of them. Both are college football related. Shocker. One is the announcement, probably in the next couple of weeks, of kickoff times for week 1, 2, and 3 games. And then the really nerdy one for me is bowl dates, when the bowl games are going to be played. That is that's super niche, if you will. Now, part of it is also I work a couple bowl games, so I want to know where I could be headed and when that could be. But yeah, those are the two ones that will probably trickle out in the next month that are just like, really? That's what gets you excited?
I do enjoy trying to predict TV lineups.
Yeah, it's a fun game. I mean,
like, to your
next week, we could do it if you want. I mean, college football should be announcing. I know a couple trickled out yesterday. I think Fox had their, what are those shows called? Upfronts?
Yes, upfronts, where they invite all the advertisers in. And we can talk about it because there were a couple of interesting things. Fox was obviously heavily on sports. NBC was not, which is a departure from last year.
Well, and it surprises me because it feels like NBC is like all in on sports. Everywhere you go, it's...
Did you see Peacock's numbers last quarter?
No. Not good?
Oh, bad.
Oh.
Like $250 million bad. They did stop the bleeding, though. It went from, like, losing $350 million in a quarter to only losing, like, $280.
Yikes. A lot of those Those football rights, gonna need a lot more help there.
Well, I mean, I also think it is interesting that the NFL was trying to get their partners to re-up before the season, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
They've got, what, 6 years left on this deal?
So there's an early opt-out.
Which they'll obviously take.
29. The threat right now is renegotiate now, and you can get a better price. If you don't renegotiate now when the opt-out is at 29, you will pay a bigger price.
Hmm. And no school, network bid?
No one's bid yet.
Okay.
And then, I mean, even to the – there's also like a – I mean, the Wall Street Journal reporting it, I think it's true. But you always have to – I'm not saying that it's not true, but you have to consider the source. You also had the reports that Rupert Murdoch met with Trump about the NFL, and that's the genesis of the Department of Justice inquiry.
Gotcha.
Fox will have the least amount of money to go into that bidding war. That might be that those two things might be related. You know where you're not going to have a bidding war for, though? NBA scouting combine, baby. I'm in. I mean, it's amazing, like, what, you know, like, now I'm at the point
now
where
that you know that, all right, can I, well, I wasn't here yesterday, obviously. All right, take me back. Rewind. I texted you.
Yep.
Immediately, as soon as I saw Memphis was in the top four, that was the biggest worry and concern. Overall feeling in town from not only, well, I want to hear from you, but also just the vibe in the city based off of getting the three seed. Or the three seed.
Yeah, I mean, it, for all intents and purposes. Shot of life. George, would you say like that? That's the way.
Energizing.
Yeah, you know, I mean.
It's kind of cool in this year's draft where you don't need, like, it's deflating in recent years if you don't get the first pick, right? Like, oh, we're not going to get Cooper Flagg. But this year, yeah, DeBanza's probably going to be the number one pick. Peterson's, I would imagine, going to be the number two pick. But then you're looking at a franchise-changing, we believe, player sitting there at three. And that was the worry, and how much we talked about was like, we just don't the Grizzlies don't want six or seven, right?
Yeah, the closest I would say is, in terms of draft lottery and how the fan base felt, it's the closest to Morant. Because to your point of the depth of the draft mattering, the Grizzlies moved up to number two in 2019 in what was considered a two-player draft. Yeah, you didn't get Zion, but you could sit there and go, cool, Morant, great. But then you weren't having to do the talk yourself into RJ Barrett. I mean, we were reminiscing about that build-up to that lottery a couple of weeks ago. I mean, they went in, I think, with the seventh odds, and yeah, you were talking yourself into Jarrett Culver. You know, like who, by the way, did actually wind up being a Grizzly at one point. I do not think he ever got a second contract. But, I mean, that's the depressing territory of the NBA draft where, you know, in the NFL draft, if your team's picking seventh or eighth, like, okay, you can still talk yourself into whoever you're getting. But in the NBA draft, if you're in the wrong draft, it can still be depressing. Or you can have the, you know, think back, what, 2 years ago? So we go Wimby, then Richie and Sar, right? and again, some of those guys have actually like wound up being a little bit better than people think, but that's not really the draft you want to win the lottery. The difference with Sunday was the way that the lottery played out, almost the biggest dark and scary terrors were avoided, and then you went to commercial break, and you knew that you were going to be top four. So you knew that the Thunder hadn't jumped up. You knew the Warriors hadn't jumped up. The Mavs had not jumped up.
Hawks
had not jumped up. And really, the only threat, and I think that they're probably a bigger threat than most of the NBA are giving consideration to, because Utah at some point is going to have pretty good players. But you have one Western Conference team that was still in the mix with you. I got to the point on Sunday when they went to commercial break where I was like, I know it really didn't matter, but I kind of was just, don't get jumped by Chicago. Like, anything else was fine, because I could compartmentalize Washington getting the one and Utah getting the one. They had better odds. Like, just don't get jumped by a team that, because then I was going to start there and wonder, the Grizzlies shockingly beat the Bulls in a tankathon battle for the ages, and it's like, was that game gonna linger and be in the back of your mind? So just getting to three felt like a win, and I think in general the entire fan base kind of got like a, man, we kind of deserved like a piece of good news. Like, we feel like we've been a whipping boy. Like, it was just kind of a shot of life.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we went to commercial break with those four teams, knowing the belief that it is, I don't know if it's a five. I think it's, how would we classify this draft? I don't want to call it a five player draft, because it isn't, because I do like the depth pieces, and you know, Memphis sitting at 16, I think they're going to have the chance to get a potential contributor. Even a team like Milwaukee at 10, you know, they could get a Jaxel Lendenborg or something like that. So it does feel like, though, the elite prospects, as the year went on, Acuff, from his scoring capabilities, kind of maybe got into the fringe of that top four. It was, you know, I think coming into this year, it was thought of as a three big guys, right? It was,
yeah,
Boozer, Peterson, and DeBanza. And then I think Wilson worked his way into it. And I think your tweet said it, right? Is it Wilson versus Boozer? My gut tells me, and I'm curious what the talk's been in town. I think there's going to be a lot of Caleb Wilson smoke and positivity leading up to the draft. Is that what you're feeling?
100%. I definitely think whether or not
it's on ESPN, it was like, floor is Kevin Durant. I'm like, okay, can we, like, let's slow our roll a little bit. Caleb Wilson might be awesome, but like, the floor is Kevin Durant, I think, is what I saw. Like, okay, it's one of the, I don't know, top 50 player of all time, isn't he?
Yes, he is most certainly a top 50 player of all time. Like, I think the end of his career has made people wonder, like, top 10 feels like that's now up for debate. But I mean, I think he's probably safely in the 25 to 30 range.
Sure.
So well within this inside the top 50. It's interesting because it seems like now, fair or not, the debate is getting framed as, if you're someone who wants the highest of high ceiling players, you're a Caleb Wilson guy. And then if you're somebody that wants Cam Boozer, you're boring. I'm not really sure how fair the characterizations are, but that's definitely what it seems like the dividing lines are.
Yeah, I don't know how to classify Cam Boozer as a prospect right now, because I think when we talked about it a couple weeks ago, I think my feeling on Cam Boozer was, it whether it's fair or not, was like, maybe has the highest floor but might have the lowest ceiling of these four guys, maybe even five if you want to include Acuff. But we do also have to remember, the guy, like, I texted a coach that had to scout him this year and coached against him. He said he was the most difficult scout he's ever had to do because he does everything. And I do think, and I don't know, we'll see how the next 6 weeks go, but I kind of agree with you. I feel like Cameron Boozer is overlooked. Is it too early to say that? It's like, the dude did average 22 and 10 and win every possible award in college basketball this year. Like, he lived up to the billing and then some this year.
I don't know, because I've kind of struggled with how to categorize it as well. There's clearly, you're never going to open up Twitter, excuse me, X, the Everything app, it's all happening on X. You're never going to open up X and watch a video of Cam Boozer's workout and have your jaw hit the floor. you did have the Caleb Wilson videos last week where you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like that is like there is that element. Now the question though for me becomes, I feel like when you become the sexy pick, the legitimate questions to ask don't really get addressed. Like, for instance, we talked about this with Chris Harrington yesterday, who, like, that's kind of the other weird thing. I've also found myself, you're now in this weird spot by the Grizzlies getting the third pick. If you had previously to Sunday at whatever, 2:22 roughly, Central Daylight Time, if you had previously thought, I like both players, well, now all of a sudden it's get in line, buddy, pick a side. And you got to be on one side or the other, which is wonderfully how the internet and the NBA works. But Cam is a full year younger than Caleb. That never works in his favor. And I don't think it's unfair to mention there's some positional questions about Caleb Wilson, and he was hurt twice this year. And he's already going to be whatever position he plays is, he's going to have a slighter frame than the traditional guy. Doesn't mean that, as to your point, could be Durant. As we've been joking about the last couple weeks, we've been waiting 20 years for Durant to add to that frame. But yeah. He, you know what I mean? Seems to have worked out well for him. But I do have like some concerns, and I get the second injury is definitely fluky, and the first injury is kind of fluky, but at the same time, it's like, all right, man, it's a guy that is a explosive player that's like a firm, hard dunker, and he's had like hand problems.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a great spot to be in. Now, let me ask this. Cameron is, what, 6'9", like 250-ish?
I'm waiting to see what happens this week.
Okay.
Do we get real measurements? I know they get to let him do it with shoes. This is why I've told you I want ABS in the NBA. I want everybody to have to sit there and go through the car wash. We got to find out how tall these people really are.
They've already done official measurements. Are you looking for Cam?
I'd like both if you got them.
Let me.
I believe the NBA allows you to do it with shoes. I don't think they say stand back to the wall.
Barefoot.
Oh, that's a new addition.
And all of this is reported by Givony, so
okay.
I know it's not just. Those are obviously first.
I'm glad to see the NBA has adopted a real combine.
All right. Cam is listed at 6'8¼", 252.8", with a 7'1½" wingspan and a 9-foot standing reach.
Okay.
Caleb, 6'9¼" height.
So he's basically an inch taller.
Yep. 210. 0.8, so
48, was that 40, 42 pounds? You said 252?
Yeah, so that's 42 pounds lighter.
Okay.
A 7'¼" wingspan and a 9-foot standing reach.
So basically the same reach and stand, like the same wingspan and reach, and Cam is an inch shorter.
And 40 pounds heavier.
So there's a guy on Twitter, I think he's a jazz, I don't know if he's a blogger or whatnot, but he has one of these stats, like plays taller than he is. Both guys factor into that, and he views that as an important statistic because he thinks the league is getting longer and taller. He is also, for the record, despite the Jazz having the number 2 pick, he has been publicly pressing the Jazz, screw conventional wisdom and take Boozer.
I mean, his pops did have some good years in Utah.
His pops also works for the Jazz.
He still works for the Jazz?
He started like last year as a scout.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't know it till CJ Herton mentioned that yesterday, and then George was like, yeah, apparently that's true. I was like, okay, well, I'll take your word for it.
I don't know. I don't see that for the Jazz. They have so much in their front court already.
I think if Peterson's there, you got to take him.
Well, the other problem that the Jazz have is the Jazz, because they've been drafting and stockpiling, almost any player that you would draft, you're going to have a redundancy of.
In a way, to me, that's kind of what's annoying. And we, Connor and I talked about this yesterday about the Jazz. They've got players. Like, they have dudes on their roster. They should be pretty good. Like, now.
Yeah. they made the trade for Triple J for a reason, right? It wasn't they're going to go for it in 28 or 27, excuse me.
I think they kind of have to. I mean, I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to like keep on paying all of Triple J, Markkanen, whenever they end up having to pay Keontae George, like,
well, Sensabaugh is going to get some money soon too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's entering his fourth year, and he kind of had a breakout season. Not like all-star level breakout, but he's...
enough to get more than the MLE.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
And well, same with Isaiah Collier, to that matter.
The other thing, though, that I've kind of been pondering the last year and a half. So if we always adopt the philosophy, it's a copycat league, and everybody tries to copy who's having success. The thing that's interesting about the Thunder is, what are you copying? Are you copying depth? Are you copying... You know what I mean? Like, SGA is a pretty unique player.
I think you're copying figuring out how to get Kawhi Leonard to force that front office to make an outrageous trade for his buddy.
Okay,
and,
so let's
and hope the, that the 11th pick of the draft becomes a future multi.
Let's set them aside, because I'm kind of in agreement with your overall point, which is, what if this is an outlier? Which I think is entirely true. Hey, they made a Paul George trade that is probably not repeatable, and they're just going to have an advantage for a little bit. But let's take it. How about the Spurs?
Well, just real quick on OKC, though. Like, watching last night and watching the series against the Lakers.
I did stay up last night. I just had to make sure that that was a clean sweep.
SGA had his best game of the series last night. But he hadn't really been exceptional for his standards the first couple of games.
Totally agree. But I think that's also part of why you saw the Lakers kind of as whiny and bitchy as they were. I think they knew, like, based on how they had played and what they had done to SGA to make him uncomfortable and to make it really hard, I think they had kind of thought they played well, and they lost by 18, 18, and 23.
I thought they did play well.
I agree. Mean, I think it shows that's how good the Thunder are.
Well, it's how good the Thunder is, no doubt. And, you know, missing a guy who averages 33 points a game is a bit of a hindrance. But, yeah, to my point, just to kind of wrap it up, it's like, they made a trade for Jared McCain, and he's coming in and burying threes left and right. Like, they also don't have their second or third best player, however you want to classify Jalen Williams, and they're just fine right now. Now, are they going to be fine in the next round? I don't know, against San Antonio, because they'll be full strength. But the stroke of brilliance on some of these moves that they made over the year, and they also got, you know, they got to draft Chet Holmgren. What was Holmgren, two?
Two.
Yeah, so you got to get a little lucky as well. Like, everything. Look, even if you went to OKC and said, you know, about the Paul George trade, it was a great trade. They didn't know that SGA was going to be this. No one did. That he's going to be a multi-time MVP.
Well, one thing we do know for certain, the Clippers didn't.
You think?
So the same guy that I was referencing, it's at DBC Jason on Twitter. He had also, there was kind of the thought of, you know, when we use the McCain of it all, he had this graph. Role players on good teams are perpetually overrated. There are so few players who matter, and the effect of those players' impact is understated. The jump from the 95th percentile to Darko, which is to the 99th percentile, that's his special formula, is the difference between Jimmy Butler and Giannis Antetokounmpo. the gap between 95 and 99 is the same as the gap between 50th percentile and 95th. So therefore, he's saying it's the same as the gap between Micah Peavy to Jimmy Butler. And I actually think it's an interesting thought experiment because I do think something that happens in the NBA is you get caught with your third guy. And especially on a run, what do? So, for instance, Denver pays Michael Porter Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Michael Porter's health obviously was an impact as well, because it's not like Michael Porter Jr. became like a horrific basketball player, but he did become a basketball player that's in street clothes. So like that factors into all of this. But it does feel like what the Thunder have sorted out right now, and maybe this is luck, as you said, from the draft and from the pecking order and timelines, they haven't had to pay the third guy yet. And so I think that's what becomes interesting, right? Because this summer, Chet kicks in, right?
And Jay Will.
Jay Will and Chet, both of their deals kick in.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, it begins. Yeah, I'm looking at Jalen Williams right now. Begins 26-27 season.
Okay. So, yeah, it's both.
Yeah, so this season, yeah.
Because I think if you go back in this CBA, if we set aside bubble with the Lakers, I don't think anyone that has won has had to pay the third guy, the massive, massive deal.
How much was Golden State paying their top three when they won in 22? Draymond was getting a bunch, right?
I thought Draymond was on that weird, 25.
Okay, so maybe he wasn't a max.
What was Boston doing?
Well, they've been weird.
They
for
hadn't
a while, right?
Browns
had, they not, had Jaylen Brown.
I think
not
his
kicked
hadn't
in
kicked in yet. The big, the $70 million one.
Yeah.
Steph Curry was making 45. Klay was making 37. Andrew Wiggins was making 31, and Draymond, good pull by you, was making 24.
The only reason I remember that is because apparently they'd worked out a deal. He was going to be a Grizzly. And that was going to be
Draymond?
Yeah. That summer. All right. Where historically? Nah, that kind of qualifies, though.
I mean, Aaron Wiggins was making
31.
31.
You know what I mean?
Their top four was making, 8,200 and, I mean, they were number one in the league. They had $184 million locked up on the cap.
They did not have a $60 million guy, right, though? Because didn't you say Steph was at 45?
Steph was 45. And Klay was 37.
I found the other big one that I was thinking about with Boston. Derek White's contract hadn't kicked up yet.
Yeah, because he got paid that summer too.
Yes. So
it's kind of like it's a little bit like football, right? It's like how many teams have won when you've had to pay the mega quarterback contract?
I mean,
so many teams just go all for it when you have the rookie wage scale for quarterback.
George, look up what Brady made with the Bucs. I think the only two are Brady and Mahomes. Because Brady, I don't think, took a hometown discount when he went to Tampa. Which might have been smart because he knew he was getting divorced.
No, he did.
Okay, what do you got?
2020, 2021, it was a two-year, $50 million contract, so that's 25 a season. 21, 22, one more year at 25, and then the last year.
So is Mahomes is the only answer, right?
Yeah.
Because Hurts was like on a top 10 deal, but not a massive. Darnold was basically what, like the 15th or 16th highest paid in terms
would
of.
Would come in at like 38, something like that, and maybe 41.
I mean, I remember thinking he got a little bit more, like if he basically had like $5 million more than like Baker's deal.
Yeah.
Which I think puts you around 16 or 17. But, like, I guess what I'm thinking about is it's this weird thing with the Thunder where you feel like you're watching the league change, but you can't quite put your finger on it. So, like, for instance, when we get to LeBron to the Heat in the Big Three era, it's like, okay, all the emphasis was on find three top 25 guys and the rest doesn't matter. And then when you get to the Warriors, it's like, okay, you've got to be able to shoot a bunch of threes and have a bunch of guys. The thing about the Thunder is I don't really know what they're doing other than they're hellacious defensively, but they're not a particularly great shooting team. It's not like they're reinventing the offensive game, but really it feels like what they're doing is they're being incredibly physical with you. They're fouling every play, and they have the depth to survive it. But, like, is that a seismic change in the league? Like, would that change how you're putting together teams? I guess what you could say is they seem to prioritize length. Like, it feels like when you look at all, even guys like Caruso, they all feel super long.
Yeah.
Is that their actual size, or is it the type of player they're bringing in? Because I don't think Caruso's all that big, but we know he's quick, he's shifty. He's able to move like positionally on defense really, really. I mean, that's his biggest strength, probably.
Here's the problem. I never know. This is something that, at my core, I agree with, but I never know whether or not it's BS when a professional team talks about it. They emphasize, quote unquote, character. And I always think that that's a nice way of saying, but like, they are looking for a certain type of attitude.
Right.
I also think that you can have the right attitude, and if you don't have the right measurables, it doesn't matter. So I think that there's more to it than just character, makeup, whatever they're saying. Like, I'm not saying it's a nothing burger, but like, I think that if given the choice between a guy that fit a certain metrics and a guy that didn't have the metrics and had a good attitude, I'm not sure that they're 100% taking them. I think what they have been very good at is identifying certain guys with the measurables that also line up with them. But like I was thinking about it, let's set them aside because I do think there's probably an outlier effect.
Yeah, I think so.
I totally agree.
What about the Spurs? Can we look at them, or is there also the outlier effect? Because what if they just have the one human being we've never seen before?
Well, I think that's part of why you have success in the NBA. Is if you can hit the lottery and get lucky with that player. But, you know, you got De'Aaron Fox, Dylan Harper was he three? Where was he last year?
Dylan was two, right?
Was he two?
Was it two or was it three? I can't remember.
I thought Edgecombe was three.
Yeah, he was two. So yeah, that, and then you hit with Stephon Castle in what looked to be a pretty weak draft at four. So, I mean, yeah, they're sitting in a pretty decent spot now for the next, for a little bit. But to your point, they're going to have to pay Castle pretty soon, right? And they're going to pay Wemby whatever that's going to be, and.
So Steph will be fully in year three. So this will be his last year where they won't announce the extension, right? Don't they announce the extension after your third year? They announce it after your third year. It kicks in your fifth year, I think. I hope I'm doing that.
That sounds right.
Right, because Chet, think about this. Chet's got announced last summer, right? After they won the title. Didn't they announce Chet? So Chet and Jalen Williams are in that same draft. That was their third full season. Like, from the draft. I know Chet had to sit out the year, but like,
yeah,
it was their third season from the draft.
Stephon Castle is under contract for the 26-27 season, becomes extension eligible after that, has a one-year club option,
yeah,
and then is a restricted
free agent. So what they've been doing is you play 3 years on your first contract.
Yep.
They announce your extension after your third year, but it doesn't kick in until your fifth year.
Right. For the Spurs, it gets a little scary because that
well,
is...
Well, they've got the Fox question.
Well, it's not just that. That is also that they have to give out the extensions this year for Keldon and Wemby.
They'd still have 1 year, though.
They'd have 1 year of those two right. guys on the cheap contract.
Right.
But then those would kick in, and they still have Fox on the books, and they still have Vassell on the books.
I think that's so... Tim, back to your last point, though. I do think, like, to tie it all together, with the Boozer versus Wilson debate, whether or not this is true, it's getting framed as if you're going to have a top five player in the NBA, it's Wilson.
Yes.
And the Wilson flag waivers are under the impression, and they're probably right by this is true, the only way for the Grizzlies to get that caliber of player is via the draft. I guess where I'm a little, where the only pushback I'd give is I fundamentally agree with like 85% of what you're saying. I'm just not 1,000% convinced that like the other one that's been getting popular is Cam Parker and Cam Bagley the third.
Marvin Bagley.
No, they're calling that. There's the next, but like I also was talking about this yesterday. Listen, there's no bigger Duke hater than your boy.
Marvin Bagley did not win every national award.
Like, well, Cameron, but on top of that, like let's take a look at the last few. Last few have a pretty high hit rate.
Yeah, I mean the top two picks last year from Duke went 1-2 in the Rookie of the Year voting. And now if the season moved on, maybe Edgecombe was playing really well down the stretch.
Like, but like I use the example, like Paolo's not my favorite flavor. I still know he's a great player.
Yeah, he's not Marvin Bagley.
All right, let's take a quick break. We've gotten some messiness in college football. We got some mudslinging. Also, Tim, is USC Notre Dame back, or is this just like more?
Not if their coach has anything to say about
it. Is this just off season? We got to talk about something. So let's talk about some college football. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. We'll get back into the NBA during the next segment when we get into the list. But yesterday, Georgia's favorite football coach, Lane Kiffin, had a article in Vanity Fair, which, by the way, I don't remember Vanity Fair covering college football. Do you? So they did a profile on Trinidad Chambliss last month, I believe, and now Lane Kiffin with the follow-up. I just don't remember Vanity Fair writing a whole lot about college football.
Diversify, baby.
I mean, I guess you got to diversify the portfolio any way you can. But here were the quotes that really got everybody going. Kiffin discussed his concerns in an article published on Monday at Vanity Fair, telling him in response to that top recruits would tell him that they were not interested in coming to Ole Miss while he was running the program there. They would say, "Hey, coach, we really like you. My grandparents aren't letting me move to Oxford, Mississippi." That doesn't come up when you say Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Parents were sitting around here this weekend saying the campus's diversity feels so great. It feels like there's no segregation, and we want that for our kids because that's the real world. Also, according to the article, Kiffin did clarify his remarks one day later. He said, "I just hope my comments come across respectful to Ole Miss." In what ways? There are some things that I'm saying that are factual. They're not shots. He has now, via On Three, I believe, issued another apology. Quote, "I really apologize if anybody at Ole Miss or in Mississippi was offended by that. In a 4-hour interview, I was asked a lot of questions I was asked a lot of questions on a lot of things, and Ole Miss has been wonderful to me and my family. I was asked questions about the differences in recruiting, and I set a narrative that we battled there for some out-of-state black parents and grandparents not wanting their kids to move to Mississippi. That's a narrative that coaches have been fighting forever. That wasn't calculated by bringing it up. I think it's true to say that's definitely a narrative that they have battled. I don't think that that has been the case, and particularly when you're talking about in comparison to LSU, as it was also reported now that one of the New Orleans TV station reported that they are thinking about also putting back up Confederate statues.
Mm. That's something.
What I'm more interested in, though, is this, Tim. So, also yesterday, in lines with, I believe, Muschamp at Spring, remember, was talking about all the classes that Texas kids had to go to?
Basket weaving.
Correct. Steve Sarkisian also said at Texas, it's not like at Ole Miss where all you have to do is take basket weaving and you can go get an Ole Miss degree. What I'm more fascinated by is Pete Golding, part of the Saban tree, also a CAA client, Kiffin, Sark, all of them. It does appear that there's target practice on Pete Golding. So is he outside of like the school of wayward boys from Saban? Like, is he not part of the family?
I don't know any on that, but did you see a John Sumrall jumped in here at some point?
What did John have to say?
Did he take a shot too?
No, the opposite. He said, grateful to coach at a top 10 public university that also offers advanced basket weaving.
Also,
plus gator emoji, of course.
Hey, buddy, you're coaching at Texas, man. Like, you're not coaching at Michigan where, like, they're paying you to win football games. Like, University of Texas is a great school. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But, like,
a lot of these schools, if you look at the rankings, are all high up there. Texas is up there, like you mentioned. Michigan's up there. Florida's a really good public institution, as well, as Summerall pointed out. But let's also not, I'm not saying all of them. Some of them go out and challenge themselves. But nowadays, a lot of these guys are just doing online classes and kind of majoring in football.
Well,
right.
Listen, I'm not saying that Cam Coleman is probably not a bright young man. I have no idea. I also know that Cam Coleman is not going to the University of Texas for their accounting program.
He's going there. Yeah, he's going to count his money.
Correct. Like, he's not trying to get into whoever puts their name on their business school. Not saying that he couldn't do it. But I also think the other problem is, this also feels like a miscalculation. I don't think fans care about that. Like, to me, this is one thing remember when Harbaugh was like, yeah, you know, it's just nice to compete with all the cheating going down in the SEC. I get it. That plays with his fan base. I don't think the Texas fans care. I think they want him to win.
It's kind of like what Dabo said last week, where he's complaining about Ohio State and Notre Dame and all these schools having more money. It's like, well, man, that sounds like a you problem, because they're allowed to pay players now. And, like, your fan base is not going to be sympathetic if you guys don't have the proper funding when you won two national titles in recent memory. So it is, yeah, it is kind of interesting when there's been a lot of shots fired, it feels like, this offseason from different coaches. And it's like, it's more cut and dry than ever, right? It's like,
yeah, I have a theory on the Golding of it.
I also think I have a theory a little bit about Ole Miss.
Yeah, well, that's they're one and the same. So my theory on this is, A, Golding is an extremely aggressive recruiter, and they're probably all going after the same guys. I think the other part of this, though, is I think it is going to be proven true. Not only did Ole Miss tamper with the Georgia, remind me of the linebacker from Clemson.
Luke Farelli.
Correct. Do I think Luke Farrelly wound up at Clemson, South Carolina on accident? No, I don't. There's going to be a key difference, though. Pete tampered from his own phone. And what I think is happening is they might smell blood in the water because I think he's going to have to get punished somehow, some way. Does that mean he's coaching the Charlotte game? I don't know. Like, I think that's what's happening is they smell blood in the water and he's coming after. He's recruiting the same guys they are.
There is also part of me that I think they don't like that there's new blood, that there's a new team.
Disruption.
Right. Oh, okay, LSU, you're cool. You could do what you want. Alabama, fine. Georgia, fine. Texas, whatever. Ole Miss, you guys went to the semifinal last year? No. No, you're not part of this group here, right? Florida, whatever. You've been there before. Am I barking up the wrong tree?
No, I think there's an element of that. I also think, though, so that is played forever. The difference now, though, is everybody kind of has somewhat of the level playing field. So saying Ole Miss, Indiana, whoever the new blood, just saying, well, they're just buying their players. Like, well, once upon a time, that would have meant, you know, NCAA sanctions and it brings the program back down. And then the big boys can go back to doing what they want to do. But now that doesn't really play. So I think we're kind of making the same point is I think they're taking the same philosophical approach that you're referencing. But I think the difference now is Pete's a little bit vulnerable. Golding's a little bit vulnerable because I do think the tampering thing is not a nothing burger.
Right.
Regardless, that September 21st game in Oxford, Mississippi.
Number one game of the season, built up game. So I guess
not according to Andy and Ari.
Did they Ohio State, Texas?
Who did they have? I obviously like both guys.
Yeah, they're. I mean, there's. Good as it gets when it comes to covering the sport. But, yeah, we talked about this. That was – I think the buildup for Ole Miss and LSU is going to be all-time. Like, all-time. Like, what's that ticket number? What's that ticket price going to be at the Grove?
George, what was – I've never
there's
before
no telling.
Never before seen. I mean, they got like a preview of it. There was an LSU fan that found his way into the Ole Miss student section of the baseball game.
Oh,
and a melee broke out.
Oh, geez, I didn't see that. I thought you were talking. Wasn't there like an LSU fan at the playoff game or no? Am I not remembering that?
Kiffin was going to try to go to the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, wasn't he trying to like be in the broadcast booth for something like that?
And yeah, I think he wanted to go on the booth, and then I think that got killed.
On the baseball one, I don't know if that fan was actually sitting in right field or if they were just going through it and decided, hey, let's
So my understanding
start
is
start hitting people.
He had been in left field. So for Tim to explain this, right field's the student section. So he had been in left field.
Which is just GA.
Yeah, like.
And left field is chill.
And he'd been kicked out. And somehow, I don't know if because it was late in the game, maybe security
yeah,
was gone. He somehow wandered his way into right field, which is where the students were, and then all hell broke loose.
I don't know. I think on the Lane Kiffin part of this all, because he's been putting just nuggets of this out in like every one of these stories just about. I also do think he's trying to temper expectations. Like more than once now, he's gone out of his way to say, hey, this is a multi-year process. This isn't just going to be, we're up and rolling year one.
Yeah, I think he's clearly been trying to do that. It doesn't matter.
Right. With the amount of money that they've
given, like that,
the spending on the roster, I don't think that's going to make a difference.
What is fascinating to me about this season with LSU is what happens if they go 9-3? Because
LSU?
What we've been seeing is the schools that level up and push all the chips in, if it doesn't like have a direct return on investment, see Mark Pope right now at Kentucky, like the money people check out, it's like there's no such thing as like year one, year zero. It's like he's you're just viewed as you're the new coach and you've got this roster, you should go win.
Oh, there's no real excuses, right, for this LSU team.
Like, he is going to be expected to win at a level that I don't even think John Sumrall is. Certainly not Alex Golish at Auburn. They're going to be offered the opportunity of show us improvement and we'll buy in. But like with Kiffin, like if they don't get to the playoff, like I wonder what it looks like, because that is also a fan base that historically, when they turn on you, they turn immediately and they don't look back.
That's Brian Kelly.
I mean, basically every coach that's ever been there other than Saban, because he left before it. All right, then the other thing I wanted to ask you about, how real is the scuttlebutt that Notre Dame and USC are actually going to play again?
So I texted a beat reporter who's pretty plugged in. I texted him the article because it came from the LA Times. And he was like, it's kind of a nothing burger because they haven't stopped talking. Like when USC, in my opinion, pulled from the agreement, even though the pushback is, well, we offered you week zero. Like, yeah, Notre Dame wasn't going to play USC in week zero. The understanding is we're going to get this thing back. I think the reason this article came out twofold. I know that there's a lot of alums and former players who are
not happy.
Not happy.
Both sides, yeah.
Oh, Notre Dame players. Notre Dame is furious. And then there is a portion of the fan base that's like, oh, you need us more than we need you. Okay,